WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Peace talks in Northern Ireland began this week, bringing together warring Catholics and Protestants. But it isn't easy to get a dialogue going on a neighborhood level between Catholics and Protestants. That's what Sister Cecilia Clegg is trying to do. Sister Cecilia is a Roman Catholic nun who grew up in Scotland and was educated in England. She moved to Northern Ireland in 1994, just after a ceasefire made the idea of a peaceful dialogue feasible. Her work in Northern Ireland is part of a larger project called Moving Beyond Sectarianism, which addresses an international problem, how to end hatred and violence that have resulted from the malignant intersection of religion and politics. We asked her to share some of her experiences in Northern Ireland. I asked her first if the peace talks have changed the mood in her neighborhood.
That's difficult, actually, to tell. I think that people are very hesitant. They dare not hope too much. With the opening of the talks, though there is a bubbling of relief that we've actually got to first base and that people are sitting down with one another and talking. But since the second ceasefire of the IRA, there has been a very kind of holding your breath sort of atmosphere around in Northern Ireland, people not daring to hope too much.
Were you in Northern Ireland when the first ceasefire ended?
Yes, I was.
And what was the impact of that around in your neighborhood?
People were stunned, literally stunned. I think shock was the biggest impact, and fear. I was actually working with a group of people in Belfast, and what it meant for some of those people who live in an area which has been particularly marked by sectarian violence was that they would have to put grills and bars back on their windows and to start taking the kind of security precautions that they had been taking before the ceasefire. And there was real grief and sadness in the people that they were having to go back to living that way and looking over their shoulders again.
So are people living now with the bars back on their windows, or have the bars come back off?
I think the bars mostly have come back off. Since we've gone into a period, though everything has happened so fast since the IRA announced its second ceasefire, and suddenly within weeks we are into an actual negotiations process. I think the speed at which things have happened this summer has taken people by surprise. But I think that the by and large, the bars are back off and people have relaxed a little bit.
Sister Cecilia, tell us a little bit more about your project and what your hopes for it are.
The project was initiated by the Irish School of Ecumenics because we realized that whilst there had been studies of sectarianism which took in the socio-political and the socio-economic elements, nobody had really sat down and in a systematic way pinned down us as churches to our responsibility for creating and maintaining sectarianism. And so we have been tasked, myself and my co-worker have been tasked with researching into what is actually happening and how the churches are functioning within that pattern of sectarianism and what we can do, particularly as churches, though not exclusively, to help ourselves and the community move beyond it.
Well, and one of your goals here is to bring together Catholics and Protestants, recognize their differences and somehow respect each other in spite of those differences. Does being a nun make you biased in the eyes of the people you're working with?
I'd like to think that it didn't, but inevitably it does. Because I'm professed as a religious sister in the Catholic community, I am regarded very strongly as Catholic, and I make no secret of the fact that I stand within the Catholic tradition. What is rather odd here is that I happen to be Catholic and British, and so the Catholic community, which looks more towards the Irish nation as its sort of source, and you know well that the IRA is fighting for a united Ireland and would be seen to be the Catholic side of the argument, though that's not entirely true. Because I'm Catholic and British, I'm regarded with some suspicion in certain quarters of the Catholic community. So I don't fit with the Protestant community because I'm Catholic, and in some quarters of the Catholic community, I'm regarded a little bit suspiciously because I'm British.
Do you wear a habit?
No, I don't. I'm sitting here in a brown skirt and ginger-coloured top and green blouse. I wear ordinary dress of the day.
And that's maybe a help in not calling attention to the fact that you're a Catholic nun.
Yes, it is. And I would be quite careful in my dealings with people, particularly in the Protestant community, or if I don't know from which community someone comes, not to introduce myself immediately as a Roman Catholic religious sister, because it raises all sorts of preconceptions, both in the minds of Protestants and in the minds of Catholics. And I like them to get to know me as Cecilia before they discover that I am a Catholic sister.
Well, describe the neighborhood that you first moved into when you moved to Belfast and why you chose that neighborhood.
Well, I moved into a neighborhood which is on the edge of one of the what they call the peace lines here in Belfast. Peace lines is a little bit of a misnomer. They are large, either corrugated iron fences or actual brick walls which separate the two communities from one another. And I moved right onto the edge of one of these peace lines so that looking out of my window, I could see the peace line. And I was just a couple of houses on the Protestant side of it because that was where I happened to be able to get a flat. It's a fairly poor area in terms of its physical surroundings, but it would be an area that was in process of regeneration, an area that was marked by some of the worst violence and the highest numbers of actual killings in the north during the time of the Troubles.
Are you still in that neighborhood?
No, I'm not. I had hoped to keep my Catholic background quiet in the neighborhood because I knew it would be contentious, but obviously didn't manage to, and had difficulty with some of the local people, and eventually was forced to move from that flat to another neighborhood.
What forced you?
Well, the flat was being attacked, stones at the windows, and I had some Protestant neighbors who went down to see if they could negotiate with the people who were attacking the building, because inevitably stones were flying in all directions and hitting the neighbors' windows and things. And the guy who went down to try and talk to them actually got a brick bounced off him. So at that point, I realized that I was endangering other people as well as myself by wanting to stay there. And so I moved.
And where are you now?
I live on another area which is between the two communities, but it is much less marked by violence. It's in an area of North Belfast, which is slightly more upmarket, not too much more upmarket, but slightly more upmarket. But still, I want to live, if I can, quite close to the dividing line between the two communities so that I can try and even physically situate myself between the two.
I think one of the ironies in when it comes to internal conflicts is that the people who are fighting each other, who are each other's avowed enemies, look identical to outsiders. You know, like the Catholics and Protestants look the same and sound the same to anybody outside Ireland. And, you know, people who were warring in Bosnia, you know, kind of look the same to everybody outside there. You know, you know what I'm saying? That
I do.
People who seem so close together to outsiders are unable to get together at all.
Yes, and you're pointing to an irony which makes the situation particularly tragic, which is that we share a lot more than actually divides us. If only we could begin to accept that we share a huge amount and begin to emphasize and celebrate what we do share.
My guest is Sister Cecilia Clegg. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Sister Cecilia Clegg. She's living in Belfast, where she's organizing dialogues between Catholics and Protestants. Now tell me how you bring together Catholics and Protestants for the meetings that you organize.
Well, I try to work through the churches because our brief is to work and feed back to the churches our responsibility for sectarianism. So I began by consulting a number of ministers of different denominations and then inviting them, making a proposal about the group work and inviting them to participate. Now, at the time that we began, which was in 1995, the first ceasefire was quite new and things were still very tense. There was still a lot of security activity in Belfast city itself and around the north. The troops had not been at that stage withdrawn from the streets, which they were subsequently, and then they had to come back again onto the streets. So it was still a very tense situation, and it was an uphill struggle to get anyone to agree to participate, because the thought of meeting with the other community raised all sorts of fears, particularly the fear of what would my own side say if they knew I was talking to the others.
Well, how did you overcome that and start the ball rolling?
Simply by making personal contacts with the ministers, talking with them, explaining to them, and eventually finding two who were willing to take the risk and work very hard at trying to find members of their community who would be willing to take the risk to join in the group work. I got the pilot scheme going, and it was due to run for 8 weeks. And it was quite tense because it was in an area that has been really particularly marked by violence. So it was brave of those people to agree to come. And we were meeting at the request of the Protestants. We were meeting on the Catholic side of the divide. And some of the Protestants were actually afraid that some of their community would find out that they were on the Catholic side meeting and talking with the others. So, I mean, it was that much of a strain for them.
So the people involved felt that they were taking a risk just to participate in this group. What did you do with them once you got them together?
Well, it's a very structured process. You can imagine if you're dealing with such deep fears in people. We, first of all, took the group separately. I usually work with a male co-facilitator who is Protestant so that we have male and female, Catholic and Protestant, represented on the facilitation team. And what we did was that we worked firstly with the Protestant group on their own and then with the Catholic group on their own, just to get them in touch with their own identity and to get them to talk through some of their own issues of difference to begin with. And then we bring them together in the intergroup situation. And we ask them, first of all, to think about what stories of sectarianism they could tell one another. And we work with them in separate Catholic and Protestant groups, even within the intergroup process. So we took them separately. My Protestant co-facilitator took the Protestants, I took the Catholic group, and they shared stories of sectarianism and decided on two that they would be willing to tell the other side, in inverted commas. And then we bring them back together again, and there is a structured process for telling the stories and getting feedback from the group who are listening.
Are these stories about how they'd been victimized by the other side?
Yes, we've had all kinds of stories. Stories of people who have been forced out of their homes, stories of people who've been attacked, stories of people who've been caught in bombings and how their families coped, stories of discrimination at work. All kinds of stories. Some of them absolutely would tear your heart out just hearing them told.
So you've got Catholics and Protestants finally sharing stories with each other.
Yes.
About how they've been attacked in some way or hurt deeply in some way by the other side. What does that get you? They're still both victimized by the other side. They're still both angry.
Well, one of the points of the exercise of telling the stories, it's a structured listening exercise as well, and we're helping people to learn about empathy. So there's a very structured process for response to any story. We ask, before the story is told, I ask one half of the listening group to listen for the feelings and the other half to listen for the needs of the person who's speaking. And then there's a structured feedback. So there is... This part of the group work that part of the group work is aimed at connecting people and bonding people.
You know, it seems that one of the things that keeps internal conflicts continuing is the sense of having to avenge the wrongs of the past. Do you, in these groups, bring up the idea that at some point you maybe need to stop hanging on to the past and just deal with the present and the future?
I have not actually found that I've had to bring that up. What happens is that once the people start talking to one another and sharing and becoming in some way bonded at a different level, they begin to say that to one another. It would be, from my point of view, it would be presumptuous of me as an outsider to suggest to these people, because I have come to Northern Ireland as a Scot from the outside, to suggest to these people that they need to leave the past and move on. But it is actually something that they come to themselves. Now, some groups come to it quicker than others. It depends on the mix of people and on their experiences. But the process moves on from the storytelling into talking more about what sectarianism is and making their definitions of sectarianism. And then in the early part where I was talking with them about their identity in separate groups, they make out an identity statement at that point under certain headings, and both groups do it. And then we share the identity statements, and they start realizing how little they actually know about one another and how many myths and rumors and stereotypes are floating between them, which are not true at all.
Give me an example of kind of typical stereotypes that you found Catholics and Protestants have of each other in Belfast?
Well, for example, one of the most obvious ones from the Protestant side is that all Catholics agree with absolutely everything that the Pope says and are directed in what they think by their priests. And when they hear the Catholic group raising questions about Catholic doctrine and the way the Catholic Church has dealt with things and so on, they begin to realize that this monolith of the Catholic Church that they have imagined is waiting to swallow them up if they move into United Ireland, because that's the big fear that for Protestants, if they move towards a United Ireland, the Catholic ethos would just swallow up their Protestant religion and culture. When they see that this monolith actually does not exist in the way that they presumed that it did, it kind of relieves tension.
What about stereotypes that Catholics have of Protestants?
One stereotype that Catholics have of Protestants is that they are all absolutely married to the monarchy and the union, and that this is the most important single thing that they can think of, and they wouldn't be critical of either of those institutions. And when they hear Protestants talking about the fact, for example, that some of them are not monarchists and would be quite happy to live without the monarchy, it's an immediate shock to the Catholic system to think that this might be true. Or to hear Protestants talking about whether they would be willing to consider an arrangement other than the union. Now, obviously not all Protestants do feel that way, but to hear that that is even considered by the Protestant community is a big shock to some of the Catholics.
So by talking about the stereotypes that Catholics and Protestants have of each other, you end up talking about their political views about the role of England in the future of the country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the actual dynamic of the process. It takes people from their own identity through sharing hurts and stories and learning to empathize and bond into the whole questions of the present, of the differences that we share. And very often what happens is that the group will bond very well, and then we'll suddenly get into the whole question of the political situation and how things are moving and what people desire. And there was one group I was working with. They had been through the process of empathizing and had bonded very well. And they had got to the point where they were trying to help each other to understand where the other stood. And they were really trying to construct an agreed view of history. And suddenly it degenerated into what one of the participants described as a tit-for-tat situation of exchanging hurts again. And when they found themselves doing that, they stopped and looked at one another in kind of disbelief. And there was a sort of shock went through the group that here we had worked so hard and thought we'd got on so well and had bonded. And here we were again doing exactly what people do in Northern Ireland, exchanging hurts and getting at one another. And it, instead of tearing them apart, it made them renew their determination to really understand one another and to stop this exchange of hurts and try and work on their differences. And that group have gone on meeting. Most of our groups do go on meeting once the process is finished. But they've gone on with particular vigour, meeting to talk about their differences.
What good do you think this does in the larger picture?
It's very difficult for me to assess that because I'm so taken up by the process and what's happening for these people. I can sometimes overestimate what is going on. In truth, what we're doing is a drop in the ocean. But what it is doing for the people who participate in the process is it's opening up a vista of new possibilities, new ways of thinking, new ways of being, and in a sense, new reasons to hope that there are ways through this, and it's giving them the tools to be able to move on.
Sister Cecilia Clegg will be back with us in the second half of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Sister Cecilia Clegg. Since 1994, she's been living in Belfast, trying to open up a dialogue between Catholics and Protestants on the neighborhood level. It's part of her larger project examining sectarianism and the church. Sister Cecilia is a Roman Catholic nun who grew up in Scotland and was educated in England. One of the inspirations behind this project is to try to explore the responsibility that the churches in sectarian conflicts have for creating or for furthering the conflict. Can you give me an example?
One of the examples on the Catholic side would have been the rules on mixed marriage. It's one thing to want to preserve the Catholic ethos in a family situation, but where you're living in a situation of conflict, to insist on that is to insist on rights of one side over the other in the community. So that would be one of the areas. Just trying to think whether there's a very clear Protestant one. There are some ways in which the Protestant sense of the doctrine of election, of being the chosen people, can lend itself to a sense of superiority, which in a contested situation leads to us claiming precedence over the other side.
This reminds me of a point I know you've liked to make, which is that sectarianism is in a way a perversion of essentially positive desires, the desires to belong to a group, to think that your group represents positive values. Can you elaborate on that for us, how sectarianism is a perversion of essentially positive values and positive desires?
Yeah. What is happening is that we as human beings, we have a need for identity and belonging and the freedom to be myself, to be different from you. And what happens in sectarianism is instead of expressing that identity, which is a positive and natural need, in cooperation with you and in communication with you, I begin to express it over against you as the other. And so that part of being Catholic becomes not being Protestant or being against Protestants, and part of being Protestant becomes not being Catholic or being against Catholics. And the distortion is that when I express my sense of identity, I have to create you as the enemy in the situation over whom I stand, and that gives me my sense of identity.
You know, it seems that there's at least two separate levels that the conflict in Northern Ireland needs to be resolved on. One is the purely political level, and there are peace talks going on now. And the other is just the kind of personal level, how people relate to each other in the neighborhoods as they go about their daily lives. I guess that's the level you're working on.
Yes, it is and it isn't. One of the problems here is that the conflict is not purely a political one, even though we need some kind of a political agreement and settlement which will give us a framework for working at some of the other levels. One of the difficulties about sectarianism is that, and sectarian conflict, is that religion and politics are inextricably intertwined, and then economics enters into the equation, because a number of the areas that would have been most marked by violence are also the most socially disadvantaged in the north. So it's a very complex web. But yes, you're right, we are working at different levels, but I would strive away from seeing anything as purely political.
Do you feel like you have to avoid getting too touchy-feely in these things, avoid from, oh, everything's beautiful, we should all love each other, we're all the same underneath?
Yes, I would. One of the areas that I react most strongly to is the kind of Christianity that says, if only we loved each other enough, everything would be all right. Really, we are all one. Because it is not true. We actually have different identities within the churches and within our different strands of Christian tradition. And it's absolutely essential, if we're ever going to make our way out of this mess, that people are able to and are encouraged to stand in their own tradition and their own identity and say, I'm proud to be who I am, we are proud to be who we are, and we believe it is positive, and we are able to affirm you as being who you are. So any movement to just make us one amorphous mass of Christians, I would resist, firstly because it's destined to fail, just even psychologically, and secondly because it takes away from us the very positive aspects of our difference.
Sister Cecilia, is there anything in your personal background that has led you to gravitate toward this kind of sectarian conflict?
Part of my training is in psychology, the other part is in theology. I have had to struggle in my own life personally to deal with the conflicts inside myself. And I also have a background whereby my mother was in Scotland, was stoned for wearing Catholic school uniform in her young days, and would come from a family who felt quite badly at a sort of unconscious level towards Protestants. So I have been struggling in my own life to overcome the conflicts that I have, both personally and from my family background. And I am still struggling. I find it a struggle each day, and there are moments when people from the Protestant Unionist community say things in groups and I feel my gut react. So I'm still in a learning process here too.
So when you get really angry, do you feel like you shouldn't show it?
It depends where I am, Terry. If I'm facilitating a group of Catholics and Protestants working together, it is not appropriate for me to show it, because I need to be helping them to work on their issues. If I'm sitting at a dinner table with friends, then I have no problem getting angry and letting it show.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your work. I really appreciate it.
Terry, I've enjoyed the interview.
Sister Cecilia Clegg spoke with us from the BBC studio in Belfast. Her project is sponsored by the Irish School of Ecumenics.